Hey everyone, welcome to episode number 9 of Robot Radio, for real this time. This is Greg Stanwood along with Andrew Martin, and after a week off dealing with computer viruses and the like, we've come back. And this is a little bit different than usual because we're going to be rambling on without a whole lot of post-production. I don't have access to my editing software at the moment, so I don't know if it's going to be better or worse, but we're probably going to sound a lot more insane and a lot more idiotic, but we'll figure it out.
Is that possible?
I believe it is possible. With all the effort I make to make us sound like we know what we're talking about when I have editing software.
I just realized that you can edit anything to make it sound like we're professionals.
Yep.
It's like an airbrush, but for our voices and our analysis.
See, already, I would have cut all this out of a regular podcast, so now all the rambling stays inside and everybody can enjoy making fun of us.
This is entertaining, though.
We'll see.
Fine.
Anyway, we've missed quite a lot of developments, being that we skipped a week that happened to be opening day. So I think to start, I'm going to go back before the season started, and we can talk just a little bit about Jeff Francis. I mean, we've had 2 weeks to percolate on what this means for the team and how it changed the way the team looks now, but at the same time, we should still address it, I think. I mean, basically what happened for anybody who missed this somehow is Francis experienced some underarm pain that is not directly related to the surgery, but they wanted to play it safe, so they've opened him on the DL. And as a result, Greg Smith slid into the rotation, leaving a spot for Esmil Rogers to get a call back from AAA in order to take the final bullpen spot. Yeah, we've already had Greg Smith start one game, and, you know, he did okay. He kept us in it.
Well, this is the part where people will come in and say, well, he gave up 2 home runs. He, was terrible. Well, he's going to be a home run prone pitcher, and Milwaukee's a good home run hitting team. That's just kind of a fact of it. I'm not saying it's going to necessarily get just phenomenally better, but he's not going to give up 2 long balls a game. The thing that impressed me most about Smith is his just the fact that he walked, like, what, 2? He struck out 5, walked 2. That was his big concern coming into any part of any season, is that he's going to walk way too many guys, and he didn't do that.
Yeah, he has a reputation as a fly ball pitcher, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So home runs are going to be just a part of his deal. And, you know, at this point, we don't really know how long he's actually going to be up there, because Francis is kind of on again, off again with this pain. He felt it again recently, so he had a little bit of a setback, but there's still no visible concern from the organization that he's gonna be out super long term. But at the same time, as we were talking about with Street several weeks ago, it's a weird place to be in when you can't find a specific cause for something like inflammation or pain or something, simply because you can't put a date of return on him. He could be gone a few more weeks, or he could be gone half the season. We just don't know yet.
Well, then that's a good thing about having a guy like Greg Smith, because really we're not missing that much or there's not that much of a difference between the two of them right now. I know that there's things that you could point out that are obvious differences, but they're both left-handers, both don't really pump a strong fastball, both throw a wicked changeup. I'm looking at Francis's career splits here, and he's been a bit home run, not horrifyingly prone, but he's definitely has his trouble with the long ball. Not a really a huge ground baller, and that really sounds a lot like Greg Smith, too. The only difference is Greg Smith is cheaper and younger.
Yeah, I'm certainly not. I mean, I'm certainly glad, first of all, that he had a good spring, and he had, in essence, I mean, he would have earned a rotation spot if we had a rotation spot open.
He was pretty much our 6th starter.
Right, exactly. And, I mean, point being, if we needed a 5th starter for any reason, such as an injured Francis, he was there to take over for us. So,
and that way, too, we didn't have to make any weird 40-man roster moves either, like with Tim Redding or whatever.
Right. And, I mean, that would have been possible, what, with Buchholz? He's on the 15-day right now, but he'll be moved to the 60-day the second we need a rotation spot. Or, I mean, a roster spot. But yeah.
Well, they're gonna be able to juggle some of the bullpen as well. I mean, Rogers is kind of a, well, who knows? He might force the issue and become a long term option. But for the time being, he's just kind of there because no one else could be stretched out long enough. And especially if Corpus, after his first outing in Milwaukee, he looked pretty decent. I'm not, you know, one outing does not a season make, but it doesn't look like after one, you know, whole inning of work that he's, you know, just pushing to get pushed back down to the Springs or something like that.
I think he pitched two innings, didn't he? I think he pitched once on games two and once on game three in Milwaukee. If you have those game logs open, you can check.
Well, yeah, let's see. His 2010, yeah, 2.1 innings pitched, two games. That's my mistake. Point is, two strikeouts, one walk, no runs. I'm not going to say, Manny Corpus is back. But he does have a changed focus, and I'm really hard on him. I'm not going to lie. I am really hard on him, and I'm not sold by this yet. I mean, April can be the most misleading month because of people coming out hot from spring or coming out cold from spring and people coming back from injury and things like that. I hope he does well still so that we don't have to have a bunch of people forcing our hands in a negative way.
Yeah, no, I'm thrilled with what I've seen of Corpus so far. It's funny that you bring that up about cold entry into the season because that was one thing that happened to Corpus in 2008. You know, a lot of people are quick to demean Corpus for the last 2 years that he's had. And while, I mean, I certainly can't call his 2008 good, a lot of people seem to forget that in the middle of the season he was actually pretty good. It was in April and May and in, like, August and September that he was struggling. And, I mean, I'm not saying that's good, but at the same time, it's something not to ignore. That he's I don't think he's quite as far away from where he was, he is now. I don't think he's quite as far away from he was going into 2009 as people thought he was.
Well, I had a brief discussion with one of our users about Corpus and how I'm getting hard on him, and I'm not citing any of the numbers and stuff like I'm prone to do. I mean, that's what I'm here for, right? But I pulled up his fielding independent numbers, his strikeout to walk ratio, stuff like that, and that stuff's all in line. His ground ball percentage, it took a dip at one point, but he was also hurt. The slider movement's still not quite there. But like I said, his FIP numbers are not that bad. It's just a problem of being hittable, which, you know, it seems like the glaringly obvious thing that so many Sabre guys seem to ignore. But, I mean, a lot of it was batting average on balls in play. And if he was hurt and he was out of shape, there's a good chance he's going to be overthrowing or hanging a lot of stuff. And if he's... It seems that he's going to be making a concerted effort because he knows that this is do-or-die time right now. If he doesn't do it, the team's going to find a way to get rid of him because we're going to have options sooner than later in the forms of Matt Reynolds. I mean, who knows what what's-his-face Matt Reynolds is going to do. Did I just say Matt Reynolds twice?
Yes.
Okay, I meant Rex Brothers. Rex Brothers, we have Buchholz coming back sometime this season, and, you know, Lord knows what his effectiveness will be. But if Corpus can basically say, look, I'm... As much as it seems weird to say I'm sorry in baseball, say, look, I screwed up big time, I've got a new focus on life now, and I need to get my gaming gear, I want to be a reliable member of the bullpen, I'd love to have, you know, options to bridge to Morales for now that basically don't put Morales in a whole bunch of shaky one-run situations and stuff like that, and I'm glad we haven't had to see that yet.
So, yeah, let's talk about how the bullpen has looked so far, because that's always been a concern of mine. It's going to continue to be a concern of mine for a while. And there's a lot of complicated things going on in the way that it's worked out right now. We have some injuries. We have some players who will be coming in the near future, but we don't know exactly when yet. So as of now, again, four games in, we haven't seen much change. Everybody's kept the roles they were given. Everybody's been used in essentially the way they're supposed to be used. Some of them have stepped up and succeeded very well. We've already talked about Corpus. Specifically Flores and Belial, have disappointed, which I don't think anybody really didn't. Well, okay. I could go off on a rant about Belial, but I'm going to hold that off until later. Maybe I won't even do it because I'm going to make people mad.
Well, it's too early to really be ranting too much. And yes, I'll admit that on the opening day rock pile, I kind of lost my head a little bit because, well, I'm the absurd Iannetta fanboy, and I really think he should have started. I mean, because opening day is all about appearances. Opening day is all about sending messages, whatever. I mean, granted, it wasn't the season opener, but the home opener is, it's all important. And I would have, Alivo had a good day. I mean, not a fantastic day, but, you know, he had a couple hits, and I'll take him. I'm just hoping that it doesn't end up we have the bloop squad coming in and taking over. and losing other people playing time.
We'll have plenty to talk about opening day, I think. I've got a lot to say about that as well. But just going back to Belial.
Back to Belial.
I wasn't going to rant about his performance necessarily. I think what annoyed me more was that he somehow won over half the fan base with a good spring and a good September. And suddenly people were like, he should be our closer. I mean, it really annoyed me in the off season and during the spring to see people so confident in him. And then the people seemingly in utter shock all of a sudden when he didn't stay in form going into the season. I mean, this is what I expected. I certainly am not any kind of prophet. I didn't think it was that difficult of a thing to predict, to be honest. I just was surprised to see so much positive belief in him. And I really don't. I never had any faith in him, I guess is the point. He did well in an important part of the season and then kept up the appearance for a while. I just don't consider that evidence that he's somehow taken any kind of step forward.
Well, September numbers will sway everyone's mind. I mean, I'm going to be a little tangential.
Torrey Alba.
Torrey Alba is a perfect example, but I'll go even a little further away from the team than that. Like, look at Ryan Howard. Ryan Howard's a good baseball player, but everybody says, oh, well, look at his September. He hit when it counted. And then other more worthy people for, you know, MVP consideration, I've been doing it all season, and they don't look quite as phenomenal as someone like Howard does in September. And you look at the career numbers, Howard's a good September hitter, and that just because it's so close to playoff time, everyone suddenly seems to think that makes a bigger difference. And it seems like it makes a better difference, but if you can't do it in April, if your team is terrible in April and then terrible again in July or whatever, you're going to need to have a gigantic September, whereas guys who are doing well in April and July or whatever other months that aren't September aren't getting nearly enough credit for putting their team in a good place before it really, really counted, so that then they can kind of take a rest and sit back a little bit. So in Belial's case, it's like everyone ignored his season of incredible hitability. But one it's kind of a weak parallel, but I'll draw out the same. Matt Belial is a converted starter. Taylor Buchholz was a converted starter. Neither of them had a place as a starting pitcher in the Rockies' rotation. I mean, after Buchholz basically pitched himself out of it, and then 2008 came back as an excellent reliever, Matt Belial has had mostly a starting career. He's had some minor league closing time, and he might still be trying to figure out how to transition into being a go out there, throw some serious nasty stuff for an inning, and go sit down. That's all you need to do. And so people are being a bit bullish, obviously, on someone who is in that transitional phase still. I think Belial could get it done, but I just don't think that we should be counting on him for leverage right now. And we don't have an option at the moment because no one else really seems to be getting the job done too well. And granted, we're four games in, but nobody is stepping out to be clearly, I should be your seventh inning guy. And if all else fails, go to the guy who throws strikes, and that's Matt Belial.
Well, I mean, I hope Corpus keeps it up so he can have that spot.
Agree completely.
And, you know, I will never rule out any player going through some sort of renaissance and making it work. I'm not sitting here telling you, Matt Belial, he's going to be awful for his entire career. We should give up on him. But at the same time, it's just that overhyping of the perception of what he was going to be going into the season doing just kind of made me nuts, because I thought, you guys are all crazy. And I knew I could be proven wrong, but I think in this case it just didn't work out. I mean, and like I said, it's two outings. I understand. I'm not jumping to conclusions, but at the same time, I think people seemed legitimately surprised that he wasn't still in form or still showing that form.
And I guess I don't have much else to add to that. I mean, it is a frustration for everyone, because we're all rabid fans. We all wanted to see the season start, and after a good spring, that's all we had to go on, really, except for some September time. And everyone's excited. Everyone wants to see the best from their players, and Matt Belial looked like he was going to be very, very, very good. And it's once again, two games, so it could just be, oh, wow, I actually have a job, and I'm not having to fight to stay in the majors for a little while at least. And he might just be trying to transition to that as well, you know, not just transitioning from starter to reliever, but transitioning from I'm going to be the first man sent down to I might have a job for a few months if I can keep my head about me, and he's trying to adjust to that still.
Speaking of bullpen jobs, let's try and figure out or lay out for everybody exactly how this is stacking up, because there's a lot of stuff that Jim Tracy wants to have. There are a lot of certain aspects and talents that he wants certain players to have in his pen, and with the way people have been getting injured and certain people who are filling certain roles, like Greg Smith figured to be the long reliever after Matt Belisle kind of got unconverted from that role. And it's just caused a whole bunch of chaos, basically. The concern here is that Tracy wants – well, it's not just Tracy. Everybody wants Joe Bimel to come up as soon as he's pitched in his two minor league games and be ready to go. That'll give him the extra lefty he wants, and which can't be too big of an issue because Flores has not been doing his job so far. Yet at the same time, the three people who we can easily get rid of are Daly, Corpus, and Rogers. And there was talk that Corpus, they would actually consider sending him down despite the salary, yet so far he hasn't done anything to warrant the demotion. In terms of Rogers, if we get rid of him, we're losing our long reliever. And so basically the reason it becomes tricky is because if we want Joe Bimel to come up on the team, we have to figure out who he's going to replace. And the obvious candidate being Rogers, who we've already established is not really more than a temporary player, it would basically mean we would have to find another option somewhere else in the bullpen to become a long reliever. We talked about Corpus maybe making that adjustment. I think he can do it because he's pitched 2-3 innings before in one session. We could also, I guess, stretch Belisle out again. I don't know how that would work. I really don't know. Maybe you can add some insight on this. Why they started to turn him into more of a one-inning guy? Was it just because they had such little confidence in our other one-inning guys that they needed one more?
Who are we talking about again?
Matt Belisle. I'm asking why did they – he went into the season clearly the long relief candidate. I mean, that was what he had been basically bred through the last season to be. And early on in the spring, they basically dumped that and said, we're going to turn you into a one-inning guy this year. And I just never really heard a full answer as to why that is. And I guess it's because they had such little confidence in, you know, the Matt Dalys and Manny Corpuses and Franklin Moraleses that they wanted one more guy who could pitch, you know, a seventh, sixth inning, one bit. And, so I was just wondering if you had anything to say.
It's probably September. It's probably that one inning he pitched in the NLDS where he shut everyone down. I'm sorry about having to make you repeat that. My mind had already jumped to Randy Flores, so I figured that's where you were going. But with Belisle, I guess they think there's something better about his stuff. If he can change our perception of him in the next couple weeks here, cool, keep him as a seventh-inning guy or whatever, the one-inning reliever. But I would not be surprised to see him kind of transition back to the long reliever if he's not getting the job done. As for what made them... I think they're just trying to throw people at the wall and see who sticks. That's really about the size of it. Because we don't have with Street down and then questions about Betancourt, they kind of like, okay, we're going to need some one-inning guys to string together here in the event of a close game. Let's see. Matt Belisle did okay. I guess Corpus did okay in the past. And from there, they just said, well, let's just go with it. Let's just bring up someone to be our long man and have them do that rather than try to keep Justin Spire on the roster or something along those lines.
Yeah, I think, I mean, especially if Belisle doesn't really excel in the one-inning role, I definitely think that the best option would be to, when Bimel comes, to get Belisle back into pitching longer sessions, and I think he can still do it. He can probably pitch 2 innings right now at least.
Easily.
And you want your long reliever to be able to pitch 3 or 4, but I don't think that's out of the question. So I guess at this point I would option Rogers down, which is obviously the correct move in that sense, and then just take Belisle and make him fill the long relief void. I think that's the easiest way to fix that situation.
Now that makes sense. I mean, Rogers is obvious. The long man is usually your easiest option. because usually your long man is a borderline guy, or it's a minor league guy who's just filling a spot for a little while, or it's Denny Bautista, or, you know, just whatever. So the long man is it's not an important role, because if you give up three runs in three innings, almost nobody really even cares what the long man's ERA is. It's just, can he get us through innings so we don't have to tax all our one-inning guys? And so it doesn't really matter what they do.
Right.
And that makes the Rodgers thing. I mean, if he can come in and be effective and, once again, force his hands and keeps himself on the Major League roster, good on him. But
Rodgers is an interesting case, because I think, and I've said this many times in the comment sections, I think that he is very close to being converted to the bullpen, because we have so much starting pitching depth below us, and Rodgers, along with Greg Reynolds, are both very close to having some very permanent decisions being made about their futures with the team, because they are going to be out of options next year already,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty crazy, which means basically, okay, we're going to have him. And I always feel compelled to say, disclaimer, barring injury, barring any crazy things happening, we're going to have at least three of our rotation spots still set next year in Jimenez, Cook, and Hamill. Francis and DLR are both on the block, so to speak. De La Rosa is uncontracted, and Francis has an option, an expensive option.
No way they picked that option up.
Right, well, exactly.
There's just no way. We can talk about Francis a little bit later, though.
Well, I'm saying
the reason I.
Oh, go ahead.
Someone made a comparison, is either today or last night, of Esmael Roger to LaTroy Hawkins, and I thought that was an interesting comparison, because Hawkins is a fastball slider pitcher who still can pump 96 if he needs to. Rogers came out, and I'm looking at one whole outing, or actually, no, I'm looking at one whole start from last year, because Fangraphs hasn't updated his 2010 outing yet as for what he's throwing, but he can pump mid-90s with his fastball. He throws a curveball and a changeup. I mean, with those three pitches, yeah, you could probably be okay as a starter, but out of all the starting candidates we have in looking at next year, Friedrich, Chacin, Rogers, and, you know, just, and then I guess throw whatever other borderline major league veteran or whatever, I'd say Rogers at the bottom of that list. Simply because of the fact he's a converted shortstop, he's older, and not older like he's 30, but I mean he's 26.
Well, and again, like I pointed out, he's closer to being out of team control in the sense of sending him to the minors.
I'd be okay with Rodgers being a future relief pitcher, because I mean, as everybody knows, relief pitchers are so fungible. They come and go, and the only ones who really stick are typically your closers or just some sort of team favorite. And look how many different relief pitchers every major league team will go through in a season. Rotation's one thing, but I mean, call-ups, trades, free agencies, waiver claims, all that kind of stuff there.
Yeah, a few weeks ago I drew up on one of the comment sections an amusing flow chart of how our bullpen spots changed over the year last year, and we had a lot of changes go through there. But anyway, back to what I was trying to say about the unfolding of the rotation next year. I mean, we're going to be losing two lefties, and I assume
maybe.
That – well, okay. If we lose anybody, it's going to be lefties, which puts Friedrich immediately in consideration for – making the team in 2011. And, you know, we have Greg Smith as well who will be in that contention. So basically it puts it hard on Rodgers immediately. If there's not a spot for Rodgers in the 2011 rotation, then he's either waived or traded, or he's in our bullpen, basically.
Keep him in the bullpen. We're going to be missing people next year anyhow. I mean,
right, which is basically what I'm saying.
Granted, we have two.
Well, why not make the transition now? Why not say, Rodgers, you're in the pen?
I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Granted, we had one inning, and he gave up two line drives that Brad Hopp was able to get under. And good for Brad. He looked pretty good getting under those and playing them pretty well. But might as well. I really just don't see a rotation future with him, barring injury or, you know, any other knock-on-wood kind of circumstance. And that's going to be his best future. He's a three-pitch guy. If he can stick, you know, a solid fastball and then mix in a curveball and change, that's all you really need right there. And if he needs to transition in and stay as a long man for the season, go for it. But I think this is going to be the best career future for him, is to stay in the bullpen. I mean, he's a converted shortstop, so you got to think about how his development was delayed as it is. He's 26. He's out of is he out of options or has one left?
He will be out of options next year. He can this year.
Last option here this year.
Right.
You might as well. If the team thinks that he needs to stay as a starter, I think it's just going to make things a lot harder to as far as roster space goes, because they're going to have to start thinking about waivers and stuff like that. And considering the fact that they were willing to bring him up as a long man, because remember when Tracy said, we don't want to bring Greg Smith up as a reliever. We want him to be a starter, and that's it. And then he made it anyways kind of out of necessity, but he was immediately bumped into the rotation, like, as soon as possible. With Rogers, I guess you could say it's the same situation as Smith, but something about it just tells me that they weren't willing to, or they weren't afraid to stunt his growth as a starter by bringing him up to start the season in the bullpen, and they were more hesitant about Greg Smith. I think it's just because Rogers has better stuff than Smith does.
No,
that's really all. That's the only thought there. I think that the organization, it would behoove them to not create a big, huge rotation battle. And granted, you can never have too much pitching, but, you know, at least get the kid into a role and say, we think you're going to have a much longer future in the bullpen. Get on it, get sharp, work with our bullpen coaches. Let's see.
Yeah, I definitely think that's the direction he's headed. And continuing on, I guess, you thought I was talking about Flores earlier. I mean, I guess we can talk about him. I have been saying over and over in the podcast that, you know, the big problem with Flores is that he shouldn't be used as a one-inning reliever. And I said that, you know, we need him to be serviceable getting lefties out. We don't need him to be serviceable pitching full innings. Well, Jim Tracy's been using him correctly, and he still hasn't been getting the job done. He's faced four batters and gotten one out.
Yeah, well, I will give him the benefit of the doubt on his first batter. Prince Fielder is good at the game of baseball. I don't care who he's facing, lefties or righties. So let's not pretend that just because he's a lefty, he's automatically fodder for the might that is Randy Flores. But not getting Jim Edmonds out is inexcusable. Walking Jim Edmonds is just terrible. Jim Edmonds is brought to the Brewers because he can still hammer righties. He can't. I mean, he has a career of being okay against lefties, but really all he has left in the tank is versus righties. He is a platoon candidate only, and to not get him out is pretty much inexcusable. Now, his second outing on April 7th faced Jody Garrett and Craig Counsell. Double to Garrett and strikeout to Counsell. And Craig Counsell shouldn't be that difficult to get out anymore, and he wasn't, apparently. But it for a guy who's supposed to be coming in and, you know, just getting some quick outs with a couple guys and then sitting down, I don't know. I mean, I've heard nothing but I'm not impressed with Randy Flores coming from our fan base, and I can't really disagree with them. He has not really blown my socks off.
I've often been kind of a devil's advocate for Flores. I think I've always found him to be one of the players that is somewhat kind of systematically underrated by the fan base. Now, I'm certainly not going to argue for his performance so far this season. He's just not looking like he's doing his job. And I don't think we should be afraid of cutting him if he doesn't get back in a groove. At the same time, I still think that a lot of unnecessary, backlash comes to him simply because that's basically all he can do, or all he's supposed to do. And last year he was decent at doing that job, and yet people still were kind of on his going hard on him because he was failing when he was being used in a role that he's not supposed to be doing, and that was kind of disappointing. But at the same time, you know, at this point, fine. I certainly have no problem with keeping a close eye on him, and you know, obviously, when Morales, assuming Street is going to come back at some point, when Morales is ready to go back, and assuming Bimal's up and ready by then, Flores is going to be in trouble.
Well, Flores is kind of being improperly cast as a classic loogie. He's not that great. I mean, he's better against lefties. Like, his career splits lefties and righties. He, in his career, in 542 plate appearances, has given up an 865 OPS versus righties. Versus left-handers, it's about 100 points less, 771. So that's, yeah, that says he is better against lefties. That's not that much different than just saying lefties are better on lefties and righties are better on righties. It's not such a noticeable split that you say, oh, wow, he's a loogie. Like, one of the guys I love to bring up when we talk about the lefty specialist is a guy who pitched for the Rockies way back, Mike Myers. His career splits, righties, 875 OPS. That's just awful. Versus lefties, 637. That's a lefty specialist right there. A guy who can come in and just lefties can't touch him. A 219 batting average and a, well, I don't have a strikeout versus walk here, but it's nearly 3-1 versus it's below 1 against righties. That but Flores' case, he is, like I said, better against lefties, but not to the point where you're like, wow, this guy's clearly going to come in and get all our tough lefties out ever.
Which is
true. I don't see it.
I still think, though, that giving him the role of lefty specialist is better because we saw last year that he can't get three batters out. That's just not something that he can do. And yet he did come in successfully several times and, you know, get us through one or two tough lefty batters. He was just better at that.
It's not a miserable idea if we're stuck with the idea of Randy Flores in the pen. And considering how much we're paying him more than nothing, it's not necessarily a bad idea. And if he's going to be terrible against right-handers and, you know, decent against left-handers, I guess you might as well just stick him against left-handers. But I just don't want the fan base to be thinking, wow, Randy Flores, just lefties can't touch. No, he's not that good.
Right. Well, no, I certainly do. I have
you know
no
what
problem.
I wish we had there? I wish we had Brian Fuentes to be our lefty specialist. I mean, yeah, he's still got closer stuff, but, you know, a couple years down the line, when his contract – well, actually, he's only signed a 2-year deal with the Angels, if I recall correctly, maybe three. Point is, when that's done, if he doesn't get a closing job somewhere, bring him back. The guy dominates lefties.
Yeah, I've always thought of him as a closer, so I never really looked at his left-right splits or anything like that. So I don't know.
It's never going to be – at this point in his career, he's older, but, I mean, gosh, look how old Mariano and Trevor Hoffman are, and they're still closing really effectively. No, I'm just kind of, you know, this is just a long shot, speaking on a whim there, but, you know, when we want to talk about guys who dominate lefties, yeah, Fuentes, 627 OPS versus lefties, and 700 against righties, which just tells you he's a pretty decent pitcher, but the 627 is pretty impressive to keep in mind there.
So you want to talk about the game yesterday a bit?
We can talk about the game yesterday a little
bit. It was a pretty fantastic game, or so I heard. I didn't get a chance to watch any of it, but I was listening on the radio from my internship in Santa Monica.
Oh, I was there. It was beautiful.
The
weather was nice.
I didn't know
you.
Oh,
yeah.
That's good.
Oh no, I got you know, everyone who didn't get selected in the pre-draft thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did. Everyone who wants to touch me. Who wants to touch me? No, I'm kidding.
I actually think I got selected in that too. My dad told me to register in case he didn't get one, but he ended up getting one, so it didn't matter. I mean, I obviously wasn't going to be there anyway. So,
well, you could have given the tickets to someone else or sold them to someone else at the very least. But no, it was a good game to be at. It was the weather was beautiful. It was a little chilly in the shade to begin things, but that's just because it's April in Colorado still. It wasn't so cold. You're like, oh my gosh, why are we here? But the stadium was surprisingly not as jam-packed as I thought. We had elbow room all around us, which, you know, shame on you, Rockies fans. A little bit of a breeze, nothing to say, oh, wow, that ball is getting blown all over the ballpark.
Well, no, hang on. I'm confused there because the attendance record yesterday was the highest attendance record in regular season history.
I don't see where they're getting that from. I've seen more packed regular. I've seen more packed opening days and firework games.
Is it just because though that more people were cluttered into certain areas, or
that might have been it? We were looking in the low because we sit in the upper deck usually about the, you know, the 330 and then the surrounding like five sections. That's usually where our tickets are, and I'm a scorekeeper, so I like those seats so I can watch the entire game and keep good track of what's going on. But we were looking down, able to spot these like little islands of green seats amongst all the crowds in the lower decks, and it was a little disappointing. I'm not going to lie to you. That's what they said too. Is it was an attendance record? I mean, if it was, it was. I'm not really going to argue with them that much. It just, from my perception, Maybe it just has to do with how they count tickets or where people were sitting or where they weren't sitting or whatever. I mean, but
maybe there were groups of people that were spent the entire game walking around the stadium or just didn't sit down or something.
Yeah,
or they all left early.
No, we're not Dodgers fans. But, I mean, I guess I'm gauging on the fact that my section, which is 333? Yeah, 333. Like I said, we had elbow room on all sides, and people were kind of rotating in and out of the seats around us just saying, hey, is anyone sitting here right now? No, they came for the first inning and then wandered off, so I don't even know if that was their seats. And I don't know. I mean, it was loud. It was fun. I heard on KOA after the game people saying, I've never been in such an exciting Rockies atmosphere. Are you joking? Have you never been to a playoff game? Have you never been to a September game? Those were much more exciting situations.
Maybe they haven't.
Okay, maybe they haven't. Thanks. No, I guess that person's frame of reference is much different than mine, but like the Tulo chant was not nearly as big and loud as it always is, and I don't know, people got excited about like the home run and stuff like that, but it just wasn't – it didn't seem quite as big and ecstatic. Like, I remember the game, it was against the Diamondbacks, Sunday afternoon game, the game before game 162. And when the scoreboard flipped over to show that that San Diego had lost to Milwaukee, everyone just went absolutely berserk. And granted, that's saying, hey, we just, you know, got to the playoff game or the play-in game. But nobody got that excited about anything during the game. And maybe that's just because De La Rosa owned the Padres so massively. And because we won 7-0. It wasn't a super exciting game, but it was a good feeling game. We killed them.
Right. Let's talk about the lineup decisions for the last Milwaukee game. That was something that caused some contention on the comments section. I'll start by just explaining my position here. I don't have a super huge problem with sitting Todd Helton occasionally. I mean, I would much rather have a healthy Todd Helton in September than I would have him play every game in April. The unusual part of sitting him or anyone else, and a lot of people were sitting that day, was that there was an off day afterwards, which I think was a little odd. I think Rank or Ringlesby or somebody wrote up an expose on some of those decisions. I didn't read it, actually. I don't know if you had anything to say about what exactly was going on, or
well, the fact he let it off by, I believe it was Rank, and he let it off by saying, this is the kind of baseball that got Clint Hurdle fired. And it's true. I mean, it's a different situation, obviously, because with Hurdle, he didn't know what to do with the team anymore. He was trying to disciplinarily bench people. The opening day thing where Barnes was named the opening day second baseman, and then all of a sudden Stewart was in the lineup, and they called him a jerk, and things along those lines there. I mean, I don't know if it's Bombers who called him a jerk. I'm not going to pin that on any player. But somebody was reported, I believe it was by the Post, as saying, can our manager just not be a jerk for once? And I don't think this is so much of a jerky thing from Tracy. Not at all. It's two games in. How tired can Helton be? And a day game or night game. Blah, blah, blah. Day game after a night game. Yeah, I kind of get making a catcher switch then. But Todd Helton, I know he's older, but if we were in August, I'd say, yeah, sure, go for it. Let Todd, you know, make sure Todd Helton saw some juice in the tank so he can give us another Saito walk-off. But if he had subbed one guy in, or even two guys, I'll give him the catcher and then one other player there, especially with our ridiculous outfield rotation, that would not have given me any troubles. But all the bench players playing, what was he doing?
Well,
Barmas can play 162 games.
Yeah, no, Barmas is definitely the strangest one. But as I was saying, I just want to make it clear. I think that it's okay. I don't see the problem necessarily with sitting Helton even at this point, because, you know, stretching him out over a long period of time and keeping him from getting tired. It's not that he's tired already. It's that, you know, let him play, you know, five games a week instead. I don't have a problem with that, but the weird part about it was that basically he got 2 days off when simply because there was an off day in between. That's what's confusing me.
No, and I'm with you on that. I'm kind of factoring that into my confusion about it. It's a combination of it is the third game of the season, and there's an off day off tomorrow, and it's the third game of the season. I mean, come on. Nobody wants to watch Melvin Mora play. He's there to play when he has to play. And if he doesn't, I mean, yep. if that's not
Melvin
the,
Mora,
that's not,
Melvin Mora should play as little as possible. We should mm-hmm. we should see him fewer than every other player on the team.
And I'm hoping this isn't a we paid money for him, we might as well get our. I hope that's not the situation. We paid money so we have a guy who can back up Ian Stewart.
We're paying Barmas more money.
Exactly. He didn't fail everywhere on the field, and that's a great thing. And yeah, great. I just used the word fail. I'm going to go kill myself now if you'll excuse me. But I mean. No, I'm not going to kill myself. He had like one, maybe two grounders, and he fielded them cleanly, got the put out. No, I mean, he got the assist, made the out, no big deal. I'm not worried about I got a little tense when the ball rolled to him. I was thinking, please don't boot it more up, please. Oh, thank God he made it. The Giambi plays, one of them was a smoke, or at least it seemed smoke, down the right field line, and he dived. He made the best play he could. I don't think Helton would have gotten that one either, but the one ball he booted on the infield, yeah, it took a tough hop, but Helton gets that every time. At least 9 times out of 10. Giambi gets that 5 times out of 10, and this is one of the 5 times he doesn't get it. And
defensively, something's definitely lost there. I just think I wouldn't have been as upset. I'm not in that mentality of, oh, it's just the third game of the season as much as you are. Because, you know, if we had to lead him straight into another series, I probably wouldn't have had a problem with it at all.
But with an off day?
But no, with the off day, I have a problem with it. Without
everybody
the off day...
Three games in, everyone is still fresh and firing. And let's say there's something that Helton reported to the clubhouse that we didn't hear about, like, hey, things just felt a little tighter than normal. I'm going to, you know, go ahead and start Jason. If that was the case and we're just not hearing about it, I hope that's the case because, I mean, I know that Helton should only probably play 120, 130 games this season.
Well, I guess the point I'm trying to make, though, is that I don't think it's that he was already tired. It's not that Tracy was being silly and saying, oh, Helton's already worn out, let's rest him. I think the idea is that they want him to rest more before he gets tired.
Which is fair enough, but when you have your ground-ballingest pitcher on the mound, don't bench Helton and Barmas.
That's true. Doing it on when Cook starts is a terrible idea. And
when Cook or Ubaldo start, you have to have Helton and Barmas in the lineup.
You know, they should be sitting Helton when Greg Smith pitches, is what they mm-hmm. should be doing. They should be sitting anybody they need to. They should be sitting Hop when Greg Smith pitches.
First, I was just about to say that. When Greg Smith pitches, there's one thing that people don't understand when it comes to splits. In matchups. I mean, this is straight from Tom Tango here, too, so if, you know, that turns you off to the analysis already, I'm sorry, but he brought up an interesting point, that everybody likes to talk about lefty-righty splits, and that's the biggest split, that's the most important split, and it's intuitive, it makes sense, yeah, I understand it, but when you have a fly ball pitcher versus a ground ball pitcher, you got to keep that in mind, too, because a fly ball pitcher versus fly ball batters is going to get more outs. Granted, he might give up a couple more long balls, but if a guy's going to hit the ball in the air, you want a guy who's going to let him hit the ball in the air in an ugly way. Because that's just how it is, and so those days you got to have Fowler, Smith, and or even Spielborgs and Gonzalez out there, just not Brad Hopp. And yeah. he made one great – well, I don't think – was that the game against – was Smith pitched? Whatever it was. He made a great hop at the wall. Hop made a hop. I'm funny.
They make that joke all the time on the broadcast. Seriously, guys. Well, cut it out.
I made it again. I'm so clever and original. He made a good play at the wall. It was an awkwardly hit ball. It didn't have home run distance, but if he hadn't got it would have been a double easily, probably three, given the fact that he was going for it. But he made it. He jumped and grabbed it, and it was a good play. And good – I mean, he's not doing anything dazzling right now, but he's making plays that he needs to make, and I'm, you know, pleased with that so far. I just still think that we should be putting in Gonzalez and right and Smith and left versus flyball, you know, or when a flyballer's on the mound. It's almost as if, was he not watching last season? We had three of the most ground-ball-y, I think out of the top 10, we had three of them in Jimenez, Cook, and Marquis as far as ground-ballers go. So that's great, put Hop in right field, let the bat take over. But now we got to be paying attention to the defensive optimality of this team. If there's one thing that we can say about this team that is our strength and our mantra is defense.
Although it hasn't been so far.
This season, it hasn't. I mean, minus those Giambi plays, and I think there didn't Tula booted a play on opening day. But Stewart, like last you know, yesterday, Stewart, it was a Stewart and Jorge show. Anything that Jorge didn't strike out, Stewart threw out to Helton.
They have a lot of defensive capability, but I still feel like something's wrong with them. I feel like they didn't work hard enough on it in the spring or something because they look slow to me.
Well, I guess you didn't get to see yesterday's game. They
no,
were pretty crisp.
That's true. I didn't, but I'm trying to navigate to some of the defensive stats so far through the season right now. I mean, they won't tell us a lot going into the future, but they can tell us how well everyone's done in the first four games.
Well, there's always been a bit of excitement for Tulowitzki coming after a big season. After his rookie season, I remember he booted two easy plays on opening day 2008. That was really disappointing because we'd all been ranting about how we had the best shortstop defensively in baseball and all that, and then he suddenly makes us all look like idiots. But
the Rockies are fourth in errors.
It's four games in.
Yeah, I know. It's still better than it's still much worse than they should be doing going into the future. I guess my point being, defense can still be a strength, but they need to do better than they've been doing in the first four games.
And I'm wondering how much time. I guess I don't have those numbers pulled up in front of me here, but Stewart and Tulowitzki, opening day, they clearly had some communication problems. There was one right in the hole that both of them could get to. It should have been Tulo's ball, or it should have been Stewart's ball, but Tulo was still going for it, and I guess Stewart didn't call him off fast enough or loudly enough, and so Stewart kind of had to push Tulo out of the way to get the ball, and then airmailed the throw to Helton. In a play that Tulo probably would have made no problem.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of the throws Stewart made yesterday were high, but Helton was able to get to them. I mean, not so high that he had to jump and make the ridiculous, you know, sweep tag, but, you know, I was afraid that we're going to see high throw, airmail. Now he got it down. He sharpened up as the game went on. It may seem like they haven't worked it all out yet, but remember, I mean, it's like our ultimate go-to for excuses. We're still young. They're still jittery sometimes. By May, I will predict you won't be seeing these problems.
Well, I would hope not.
out of our defensively optimal players, you won't be seeing these mistakes come May. Probably come second week in April, which is like tomorrow.
well, yeah.
You see my point. Now that they've kind of gotten, you know, they're just kind of shaking off the jitters. I'm sure a lot of young players have opening day jitters no matter what, opening week jitters no matter what. Even if they're Troy Tulowitzki and are the bread and butter of this team. They're gonna shake it off. They're gonna be fine.
I certainly hope so. I don't necessarily feel that that's not what's going to happen either. I mean, we've talked about it many times on the podcast before. They have a lot of defensive talent, and they're still showing it off. It's just, it's still not come up to the expectations, I think. And of course, after having so many problems in the spring, it just maybe it's lingering a little bit more in my mind than it should be.
Well, this is the kind of point where you got to look at a guy's career numbers. A career reputation's a bad word because reputations get you in trouble. But we know that this is a good defensive team. We have seen this being a good defensive team over the past 3 years of Colorado Rockies baseball. Think about it from the other end of the spectrum. If let's just pick someone. If Clint Barmas comes out, bats four, you know, has a rookie April like he did in 2005 with, you know, 400 batting average, a bunch of home runs, and a bunch of exciting stuff like that. Are you going to suddenly say this guy's a 400 hitter? Absolutely not. I'm going to go to his career numbers, and I mean, obviously a rookie wouldn't have numbers, but look at the team's career numbers, so to speak. We are a good defensive team, and a couple, you know, a stretch of, you know, seemingly slow, seemingly poor communicative defense isn't going to tell me much any more than if a guy had a super hot week or a super hot month even. They're going to regress to their career averages. In this case, it will be a progress. They will rise back up to defensive excellence again.
Okay, so let's talk about just for a quick bit to wrap this up. Let's talk about the first month schedule, which is something I've wanted to talk about for a while, and we would have talked about it last week if we'd gotten the chance. But it's interesting. There's a very small amount, and this is really true for all the teams in the division. There's a very large lack of NL West interplay. We will be playing, after we finish the series with San Diego on Sunday, we will be playing the Mets, the Braves, the Nationals, and the Marlins before we play another NL West team.
Good. I would rather us get our April jitters away. I guess it all wins are wins, losses are losses, but I'd rather not have to set up a season again where we're losing to all our divisional rivals right off the bat.
Right, and you can say wins are wins, losses are losses, but it is true that a loss against a division rival is worse because it's a win for the division rival.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, what we've heard a lot about Major League Baseball scheduling, and this actually is kind of contrary to the point that you're making here, but they're trying to shift games more away games for Colorado, for Cleveland, for Minnesota early in the season because we are snowy areas that are prone to freak weather. New York as well, places that are going to get snow. They're trying to get more people into warm weather places, which is still kind of silly because our four divisional rivals are Arizona and three California teams.
Well, and so also, we actually have as many home games in April as we do away games.
Okay, so right out the window then.
Yeah. Okay, that's not quite true. We have an extra away game because we play San Francisco on the 30th in San Francisco. But I think...
Clearly, they're shifting everything away from Coors then, clearly.
Yeah, we have a decent... We have many more home games this April than we did last time. I remember we got out on a gate with, like, three more... We had, like, nine more away games than any other team at one point. But, yeah, we play 12 games, four series at home, against San Diego, Mets, Marlins, and the Diamondbacks. We'll all be in Coors by the end of the month.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then
I guess shows what I know, huh?
And then we have away series with Milwaukee, Atlanta, Washington. Hey, wait a minute. 1, 2, 3, 4. Now I have to count them out. Yeah, we have more home games than away games.
I thought you looked into this earlier in spring training.
I did, but trust me, it's 12 home games, 11 away games. We play four
spring training for everyone.
Yeah, we play four series at home, and they're all three games, so that's 12 games. And then we play three series away, three full series. Two of them are three games, that's six, plus a four-game series at Washington, that's 10, plus the San Francisco game at the end, that's 11. So we have more home than away. I succeed at math.
Yeah, I'm glad we have only four off days. So I was about to say, what's with all the eight off days? There are 22 games and a 30-day. The season didn't start till the 4th. But I'm glad they're not two games, day off, day game, day off. Nah. They got to condense the season a little bit. We cannot have baseball going into November.
I had a thought, but it vanished. Oh yeah, the middle of last season, maybe late middle, I think August-ish, I'm not really sure, there was a stretch where we had like three straight weeks of games.
Where, I do remember that, yeah.
Yeah, where we just fell into a weird position where we weren't scheduled an off day for a really long time. We've got another off day after this series, that's next Monday, but then we don't have another one until the 29th. We play, let's see, that's what, 13 straight games, I think?
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's 2 weeks a game. It's not completely out of the line of reason there, but that's a lot of baseball.
It does involve four plane trips.
Oh my!
Yeah, we go to Atlanta, to Washington, and it's three. Never mind.
Oh, a lot of East Coast stuff there too. I mean, it's not going to be cross country every week or something like
right.
that.
Right? Yeah, we'll be over in Atlanta and Washington. Yeah, it is. It's a lot of East. We're going to have played every NL East team except the Phillies by the end of the month.
Good. Screw the Phillies.
Save them for later.
Yeah, wait until we get into our stride and get to face the July Rockies. They're much better than the April Rockies.
Yeah, that's true. Hopefully we have some good April Rockies this year, though.
Yeah, prove me wrong, boys. Prove me wrong.
I'm going to go look into May. Now I'm curious to see what's going on later on. That's when all the NL West stuff happens.
Oh, boy. Well, hopefully we got the April jitters out of the way and we're ready to start fighting in May.
Yeah, we go into May with a road trip all over the NL West. San Francisco, San Diego, Dodgers.
So, yeah, wow. Stupid divisional rivals. I hate our divisional rivals. I don't hate Arizona. It's funny, I'm like the only person who doesn't hate Arizona.
I'm the only person who doesn't hate the Dodgers, so.
I have a soft spot for the Dodgers, not because I actually like them, but because my dad grew up watching the Dodgers, and my grandmother's still a big Dodgers fan, and we make sure to call each other pretty regularly, and she lives in L.A., and we decide to razz each other, and the conversations are, you know, they're very grandson-grandma-ish, but it usually involves, oh, we're gonna beat you, and I'm picturing her shaking her fist at me, and And we like to talk some very mild trash about our teams, but it's still a blast.
It also helps that there are a lot of players on the Dodgers that I actually like, which is not the case with, say, the Giants. I hate the Giants. The Giants annoy me a lot. Now we're going to get Giants fans who, for some reason, listen to this podcast get really mad at us.
There's probably none.
I'm sure there aren't.
I want to make sure Rockies fans are listening to us. Okay. Then we'll worry about the other people.
If you are a Giants fan listening to this podcast, what are you doing?
Really. Do you really need to hear about our 60-day DL and 40-man roster? I'm sure you don't care.
The Giants are the Giants, Diamondbacks, Marlins, and Yankees are my like four teams of doom that I absolutely can't stand.
See, I really have nothing against the Marlins. I mean, I have trouble hating good baseball players, and the Giants just don't have a lot of good baseball players, so I have no problem not liking them at all. They have Lincecum, they have Kane. Past that, I'm like, yeah. Oh, yeah, and this Kung Fu Panda, he's pretty cool, too.
Well, I'm a huge fan of Lincecum's. Everyone knows that, because I'm always there defending him when people are making fun of him. But I can't stand Matt Kane. I think he's a jerk. He has a personal problem with our team as well. I don't know if you remember all those weird things he was saying back in like 2007 about us. But it was pretty suspicious, and he just gets mad at Colorado for some reason.
Whine. No, I have trouble hating the Marlins because I feel like the guys in their team are so. Handcuffs the wrong word, but it's in such a situation of. Well, this is what you got. Deal with it.
Right.
Because
so
they're not going
to
go.
It is easy to feel sorry for them. I mean, they have a horrible stadium, which is going to change soon, hopefully. And they also don't – they you know, other than Tampa Bay, they have one of the worst fan bases imaginable in terms of showing up to support them. But, you know, a big part of that, as has been pointed out, is that everything about their facility is awful. And it's not necessarily that people don't like the Marlins. It's that nobody wants to spend their time with them.
Well, at least at Joe Robbie. Sun Life Stadium or whatever they're calling it anymore. The Marlins fan base, hopefully they will start to show up again when they have a retractable roof stadium and they are the Miami Marlins. I nothing makes me sadder than an empty ballpark in the summer. That just makes me sad. I'm like, can I get a good deal on airfare? I'll go watch you guys, I promise.
You must feel really sad when watching Tampa Bay.
Yeah, it's a similar situation. They had such cool plans for a park too. I saw the drawings and the designs when they first released their the name change and the new uniforms. They also released artist mock-ups of what the new stadium would look like, and it is so cool looking. Rather than having like a retractable roof, it's a fully open air stadium with a huge retractable screen that goes over everything just to kind of keep rain off.
Interesting.
And it just looks right there on the waterfront. It's a really cool looking place, and it's in like a big outdoor pier type mall, like a Santa Monica Pier kind of area or something like that. And it's just like a really cool place to go and spend your Saturday, you know, go and do some shopping, go and, you know, have a nice lunch on the waterfront, and then go catch a Rays game and watch them win or something. I don't know. The Rays are a really good team. Don't get me wrong.
Oh yeah, it's true.
But speaking of AL East, actually, have you heard about this whole the Red Sox Yankees taking for freaking ever and the umpires throwing a fit over it? What do you think about that?
I think it's amusing. First of all, that you don't hear a lot of stories where the umpires kind of inject their own personal views on how the game is unfolding in there. They try to remain distant from that, so they must really have been angry about it for them to actually make a statement. But
well, do you think they have a valid point in being angry?
Yeah, I think that. I mean, I don't necessarily know that they would have a valid point in, like, you know, I certainly don't think they'd be able to, like, penalize them for taking too long, but I think it's fair for them to say, hey, it is annoying when you know, something like this goes on.
Well, I was listening to a Baseball Today from yesterday, and I listened to Jason Stark talk with Eric Carabel. And they're basically kind of giving them the benefit of the doubt because they're the Yankees and Red Sox. Like, I tried, like, Carabel saying, oh, it's just baseball. I like baseball if it's 2 hours long or if it's 4 hours long. And I'm thinking, you just don't want to criticize the Boston Red Sox. because they're ESPN's bread and butter, the Red Sox and the Yankees. I think it's ridiculous. I really do. I don't think Posada needs to make a zillion mound visits. I understand there's going to be a lot of TV breaks because, well, you got to have the Red Sox and Yankees and have a whole bunch of wasted time in there for ads and stuff like that. But
well, here's a question for you then. Do you think that the Yankees and Red Sox are consciously aware or feel entitled because of their status that they get to take as long as they want?
Well, absolutely they do. There's no way around it. I mean, I don't think every individual ball player necessarily has that, but the team as a whole, I can see them all, I mean, I can see the team kind of having a they bring in a new player. I don't think Curtis Granderson's thinking, well, I'm a Yankee now, so I can take as long as I want. I don't think that's the case at all. I don't think Javi Vasquez is going to come back and say, well, I was a Brave, but now I'm a Yankee, so I can take as long as I don't think that's the case at all. I just think that the players who've been there forever, Jeter, A-Rod, Gardner, whoever else, thinks they can take forever, especially Posada and whatever pitcher happens to be pitching that day. You don't, I mean, like, I'm going back to the playoffs now. You don't need six mound visits an inning. You don't. I understand slowing the game down, and when Betancourt and Street slow the game down and keep it under their control, that's painful to watch in a game that isn't buried in TV. But no, don't stretch. The way Caraba phrased it is that the Yankees and the Red Sox lineup are guys who will grind out every at-bat, and that's going to take longer. What does that even mean? Yes, I understand taking pitches and fouling off. Do you think other players aren't trying to get the most out of their at-bats, too? Oh, well, I don't want to be here for more than 3 hours, so swinging at the first pitch. No, they don't do that. Every team wants to win. Don't suddenly make the Red Sox and the Yankees out to be, you know, it's okay for them to take for freaking ever when the other 28 teams aren't.
Right.
It drives me nuts. I do think there's a sense of entitlement there.
It makes you wonder why games where Todd Helton is playing don't take 3.5 hours, you know.
Jesus, there's 12-pitch at-bats, you know, three balls, two strikes, 17 foul balls, and it takes half as long as a 6-pitch at-bat with, you know, the Yankees and the Red Sox because the catcher isn't coming out to chat with the pitcher every single pitch. It drives me nuts, and I'm... You know, they're saying I can't believe the umpires actually stepped out and said something. Well, I think the umpires realize that they have to umpire every team in their particular league, and they're saying the other teams aren't doing this. Why do these guys get away with it?
Yeah, that goes back to what I was saying before about how the umpires never really seem to make statements like this, so it must be a really big deal to them if they were that upset about it.
And I'm not trying to say that I don't want to watch extra baseball or something like that, but when it's a four-hour game because of how long everything is taking, everyone calling for time, every catcher coming out, whatever, that's not extra baseball for me. That's extra watching guys walk around for me.
Well, it's been an hour and 2 minutes, so I think it's about time to wrap it up. You have anything?
No, they can listen to us talk more. This is unedited.
Oh, okay, they're probably tired of us already. They've probably turned it off. And
golf clap for you if you're still listening. Golf clap. Golf clap.
We have no audience. Cry. Actually, one final note that we can end on positively. We haven't been getting a lot of comments on the posts, but I've actually run into people elsewhere on the internet who have cited us, which is kind of cool. So,
really, where?
At the ESPN board and also on the MLB forum. And we haven't advertised there at all, which means somebody just stumbled upon it somewhere, which is cool.
What did they say? Do you recall?
No, I don't. They said on the MLB board, somebody pointed out that we had talked about, I think it was Jeff Francis or something like that, something about his expectations and coming back. And then I pointed out that I was actually the host of the show, and they were surprised.
But, so you're actually on the ESPN boards. I'm surprised you haven't lost your mind yet.
This one was on the MLB boards.
Same thing. You haven't lost your mind yet. Good for you.
Well, I guess you didn't know. I mean, that's where I started. I was there for 2 years as a regular. It was Poseidon who brought me over to – I mean, I met him there, and he left for Purple Row. And then when he got to be part of the staff, he lured me over there basically. So,
well, like I said, I'm going to stand by my original silly statement.
That I had good that I didn't lose my mind in 2 years
you
there.
You didn't lose your mind, yeah.
Yeah. The ESPN boards are funny. They're kind of ridiculous.
There's so much hatred on those boards. Oh, my goodness gracious.
It is amusing to read, though. I mean, as long as you don't try to take it seriously.
Yeah, I'm a fan of intelligent discourse. And
well, I am, too. It doesn't mean that you can't be amused by you know, the crazy ramblings and trolls on the ESPN board.
I consider it self-loathing when I take the time to really read through their message board. I just want to start responding, and I can feel myself pulling my hair out, but I can't look away. It's like the worst car accident ever or something.
Yeah, it reminds me of when you were arguing with all those people on the Facebook group. It's like, why even bother? Just ignore them. Just let them, you know, rot in their pool of insanity.
Yeah, look how wrong you all are. Look at you. Wrong. But I can't stop looking at the – I can't come to bed now. There's somebody wrong on the internet.
It's always annoying. I still occasionally – I used to be much worse, but I used to correct people all the time, especially when it came to grammar. Not because I'm some sort of grammar elitist, because I couldn't live with it without them knowing that they spelled lose wrong.
Oh my gosh, lose.
Yeah. Anyway, we're just making it worse. Everybody is tortured, and I hope nobody has been subjected to this in chains by like a kidnapper or something, because they're probably long lost in terms of, you know, their mental stability.
That'd be pretty funny, actually, in a horrible kind of way.
Yeah. I hope we didn't give somebody a terrible idea there.
Anyway, we did. You know, we did. It's our fault. We're sorry.
I guess that's everything we needed to say for now. I think we'll have editing back in the future. I don't know. Maybe you guys like this.
I love
like
how
this.
You said that's all we need. Yeah, I love it how you said this is all we needed to say, because
yeah,
we didn't need to say what we said.
No, it's true. And I think we'll have editing back, but I guess there's some sort of weird chance that everybody prefers us this way because we sound so much more ridiculous that they –
dead serious. Everyone who's listening, comment on it. Give us a yes or a no and a brief explanation. Do you like this open-ended, not edited, not cleaned up, sillier version? And yeah, we're probably going to cut some little stuff out, just big spaces or you know, that time when the truck rode by or what – you know what I mean. But do you like the open rambling more, or do you want us to stay very concise and get to the point?
Yeah, I think it'll be pretty split, honestly. I don't know.
Well, just please, if you're listening, it'd be kind of fun to hear, first of all, how many people actually listen to us, and second of all, how many people like this, because I'm entertained by it.
It will,
of course, I'd like to talk.
I just have to add that if you guys tell me that it should not be heavily edited, I will stop, because it takes 3.5 hours for me to do it every weekend.
Seriously, this is going to be win-win, you know, because either you're going to get what you want to hear, and or you're going to make Greg's life easier, or both.
Yay! Anyway.
That was the saddest yay I've ever heard in my life. Yay!
It wasn't meant to be sad. It was just a tiny bit sarcastic. But
it sounded so futile.
Well, it is, but whatever. Anyway,
let's end this.
Yes.
End this.
I'd like to thank you all for joining us. On behalf of Andrew and myself, take care.